I entitled this sermon, Willing to Love. In most people's thoughts, I probably should have been preaching this one on Valentine's Day. But this is what was given to me to preach on. Recently, a husband shopping center opened in one of our major cities where women could go to choose a husband from among many men. It was laid out with 5 floors, with the man increasing in positive attributes as you ascended up the floors. The only rule was once you opened the door to any floor, you must choose a man from that floor. And if you went up a floor, you couldn't go back down except to leave the place, never to return. A couple of girlfriends went to the place to find men. On the first floor, the door had a sign saying, "These men have jobs and love kids." The women read the sign and said, "Well, that's better than not having jobs or not loving kids, but I wonder what's further up." So up they went. The second floor said, "These men have high-paying jobs, love kids, and are extremely good-looking." Said the girls. "But I wonder what's further up." The third floor said, "These men have high-paying jobs, are extremely good-looking, love kids, and help with the housework." "Wow," said the women. "Very tempting. But there's more further up." And up they went. The fourth floor said, "These men have high-paying jobs, love kids, are extremely good-looking, help with the housework, and have a strong romantic streak." "Oh, mercy. But just think what must be awaiting us further on." So to the fifth floor they went. The sign on the floor said, "This floor is empty and exists only to prove that women are impossible to please." It does seem like that sometimes, doesn't it, guys? This morning, we are going to look at one of the greatest love stories ever written. It's found in the book of Ruth. Hopefully, I will open your eyes to a different part of the story than the part that you may have focused on before. Although we will talk about the whole story in the book of Ruth, I want to focus on the scripture passage that many people have in their homes. Due to time constraints, I will summarize the character development that has occurred prior to our passage. A Hebrew man named Elimelech left Bethlehem, where he was from, because there was a severe famine in the land. He went to live for a while in the land of Moab and obviously took his family with him. His wife's name was Naomi, and he had 2 sons. Well, Elimelech died in Moab and left his wife with their 2 sons, who eventually married Moabite women. After 10 years, the 2 sons died without having any children. Naomi was left without her husband and her sons. Financially and emotionally, this would have been devastating. Without any means of support, Naomi had no other choice but to return to Bethlehem and look to her extended family for some means of help. Now, another great sorrow would have been the absence of any grandchildren. There was a custom that happened in the land that if a husband died, in fact, you may remember that the Pharisees brought the same exact custom to Jesus for him to figure, actually the Sadducees did, brought the same problem to Jesus for him to figure out. But the custom was, when a son died, that, and he had his wife and he didn't have any children, that the next brother or relative, male relative, closest, would have to take her, his dead brother's wife, as his wife, and have a child with her. And that first child would not belong to him. It would belong to his dead brother. It would be in his dead brother's name. Okay? That was so that they carried on, passed on all of the stuff that the firstborn and things like that gets. And so they had this custom. They actually called it redemption. They redeemed the woman. The next brother had to redeem the woman and have a child by her. However, there were no more sons. Naomi hadn't had any other sons to fulfill this obligation. And Naomi was too old to fulfill this requirement in the future. As I said, the Sadducees, the difference between the Pharisees and the Sadducees were Pharisees believed in an afterlife, an eternal life. They believed in the resurrection. The Sadducees did not believe in the resurrection of the body, which made them sad, you see? So they didn't believe in that, and they brought this problem to Jesus and said, well, if the first this brother marries this woman and he dies, and then the next brother marries the woman and he dies, and the next brother marries the woman and he dies, and yada, 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 when they get to heaven, whose wife is she going to be? Because she's been married to all three brothers. And Jesus, knowing they were attempting to trap him, said, you don't understand at all that in heaven you are neither married nor given in marriage. You're like the angels. They don't marry and they're not given in marriage. And so that type of relationship doesn't happen. Will you still know that your spouse was your spouse? Absolutely. So back to our story. Naomi had heard that God had provided for his people and had given them food. So she and her daughters-in-law packed up to return to Bethlehem. And now I want us to read this passage, verse 1, 8 through 18, because I believe that this part of our story is one of the most vivid examples of true love that you will ever read. And it has nothing to do between a boy and a girl, or a man and a woman. Then Naomi said to her two daughters-in-law, go back, each of you, to your mother's home. May the Lord show you kindness as you have shown kindness to your dead husbands and to me. May the Lord grant that each of you will find rest in the home of another husband. Then she kissed them goodbye, and they wept aloud and said to her, we will go back with you to your people. But Naomi said, return home, my daughters. Why would you come with me? Am I going to have any more sons who could become your husbands? Return home, my daughters. I am too old to have another husband. And even if I thought there was still hope for me, even if I had a husband tonight and then gave birth to two sons, would you wait until they grew up? Would you remain unmarried for them? No, my daughters. It is more bitter for me than for you because the Lord's hand has turned against me. At this, they wept aloud again. Then Orpah kissed her mother-in-law goodbye, but Ruth clung to her. Look, said Naomi, your sister-in-law is going back to her people and her gods. Go back with her. But Ruth replied, don't urge me to leave you or to turn back from you. Where you go, I will go. And where you stay, I will stay. Your people will be my people and your God, my God. Where you die, I will die, and there I will be buried. May the Lord deal with me, be it ever so severely, if even death separates you and me. When Naomi realized that Ruth was determined to go with her, she stopped urging her. I think that's just one of the most beautiful scenes that you could ever read in any love story. And it doesn't. It has nothing to do with a man and a woman. Now, first of all, I feel required to tell you that Orpah obviously loved Naomi. She wept at the prospect of leaving her mother-in-law. Naomi seems to have been a loving woman that inspired the people around her to love her. Now, neither of the daughters-in-law are required to go any further, but both of them show great sorrow at the prospect of separation from Naomi. However, I want you to see the difference between Orpah's response and Ruth's response. Orpah ends up doing what Naomi says and goes back home, while Ruth adamantly refuses to leave Naomi. If you don't remember anything else about this sermon, which I think is quite likely, I want you to remember that true love takes action. It requires more than words. True love is not so much a noun as it is a verb. You can tell someone that you love them all you want, but until you take that step and do something about it, you will never see the real beauty of love. I believe that only when you take action in love will the real blessings be realized. When I told Paula's boss that I was going to marry her, he told me to stand in line. And I found out that she had actually been dating someone for quite a while. But you know what? He had never taken that all-important step. He never put a ring on her finger. He never asked her to marry her. And his lack of action on his part became one of my greatest blessings. See, the difference was, he loved her, but he didn't take action. I loved her, and I was ready and raring to take action. Love takes action. Now, why do I believe that this passage is the greatest example of love? When we haven't even gotten to the part of the love story that everybody recalls, because far too often, we mix up the agape love that God calls us to with the eros love that we find much easier. Agape love is a selfless love and is given without condition. The love that Ruth shows Naomi is much closer to pure agape love. It is not influenced by Naomi's beauty or the lack thereof. It isn't hindered by Naomi's age or her lack of money or means. It reaches out beyond social, economic, and ethnic borders. It speaks more about the one who loves than the one who is loved. Doesn't it? Doesn't this story tell you more about Ruth than it does about Naomi? This story is an example of God's love for us, because agape has absolutely nothing to do with the state of the receiver, but is wholly dependent on the heart of the giver. It's hard for me not, Stevie and Paula will tell you that I tear up at the slightest provocation when I'm watching movies. It's hard for me to even read, because I can hear this from, you can hear it from Ruth's voice. How much she loved Naomi. Jesus Christ tells us in John 15:13, greater love has no one than this, to lay down one's life for one's friends. See, in the case of Orpah and Ruth, they would essentially be throwing away the rest of their lives for Naomi, since they had little chance of ever having a family, which in that society was truly the thing that, by which you were judged, if you had children or not, if you were married or not. Those things were all encompassing for women. And so if they had gone with Naomi, they would have been throwing that away as far as their thought spite of the bleak future that must surely await her, Ruth gives that reply, and I want to repeat it. But Ruth replied, "Don't urge me to leave you or to turn back from you. Where you go, I will go, and where you stay, I will stay. Your people will be my people, and your God, my God. Where you die, I will die, and there I will be buried. May the Lord deal with me, be it ever so severely, if even death separates you and me." Let me just say, if there's young ladies here, if you get to the marrying age, when you find a Christian boy that shows this kind of love, or boys, guys, when you get to that marrying age and you find a Christian girl that has that kind of love, take the action. Because that is hard to find. This kind of self-sacrificing love is hard to find. How incredible that proclamation is. What selfless love Ruth had for Naomi. And I believe that it's expressly because of this selfless love for her mother-in-law that Ruth is so blessed in the continuation of this story. So we're going to walk through the rest of the story. So Ruth and Naomi head back to Bethlehem. The women in the town are, the second they see him, start gossiping. And they say, "Is this really Naomi?" they ask. And then, look at something else in the story. Naomi tells the woman in verse 20 not to call her Naomi, which means pleasant, but to call her Mara, which means bitter. Because God has made her life very bitter. We've got some people in our congregation that seems like there's been nothing but rain pouring on them for a while. It seems like God has just purposely made their lives bitter. And it's hard for them to understand why. Why? I don't know why. We could get so depressed by the terrible things that have happened in our lives, though, that we can't see the great things that God has done. See, Naomi has said, "God has made my life very bitter." And she had all these tough things go on in her life. We don't know why. Listen, they may have occurred because Elimelech chose to leave the land that God has provided in order to maybe find something better in Moab. Sometimes, you know, we think the grass is greener over there. And we get over there, and it ends up not being any greener. Right? And it never says that God told Elimelech to leave. He just did. It may have been because his sons ended up marrying Moabite women, which God had already said was wrong. That you were not to marry outside of the Jewish faith. We don't know. It could be that God just wanted to show his loving kindness to Naomi, Ruth, and the rest of us that read this story. Whatever the reasons for the hardships in her life, Naomi had lost the ability to see God's love in it. We need to remember that no matter how tough things get, God has given us great blessings and will continue to bless us because he loves us. Remember the verse, most of you will remember this verse, Romans 8:28. "And we know that all things God works for the good of those who love him, who have been called according to his purpose." You see, God had a plan for Naomi that she couldn't see. And that's the way it is in each of our lives. God can take the things that we are that are ugly and the things that have happened to us in our lives that are ugly and horrible and make something beautiful out of them. You see, Naomi didn't see the wonderful blessing
That was Ruth, and she was right in front of her.
Isn't that amazing?
That this woman loved her so much that she was willing to throw the rest of her life away and accompany her to a strange land with strange people that were going to look at her as an outsider, all of those things. She was willing to do that because she loved Naomi, and Naomi could only see the bitterness when she should have been seeing the blessing that is Ruth.
Let's finish the story, because I want us to see where God makes something beautiful because of Ruth's faithfulness and love. And we don't have time to read the whole story. Listen, I would encourage each and every one of you to read this story. It's a wonderful short story. It doesn't take long to read, but it has a lot in it. Ruth begins to gather barley in the field owned by Boaz. See, God, as we work our way through Leviticus, we'll see this, but when the people were harvesting their land, they were told to leave some laying around. Why do you do that? So the poor people can come and pick that up and they can feed themselves. See, they're still having to work, right? The poor people, it's not like our society where if you're poor, just send me that check. I'm watching the prices right in General Hospital. Send me the check. It's not like that. See, if you wanted to eat, you still had to go out and work for it. And so God had this in mind, and so they would leave it, generally speaking, on the outsides of the field, right? You don't want these poor folks trampling over your crops. So generally, you leave it on the edges. So they have to come and pick them up, sift through them, and get their food to feed their families. And she was gathering this barley in the field owned by Boaz, a relative of Naomi's. And it's quite obvious, by the way the story is laid out, that when Boaz sees Ruth, it's love at first sight. In addition to that, Boaz tells Ruth that he's heard of the selfless love that she had for her mother-in-law. That love was so great that the people around her had talked about it. And he's heard of what she did for Naomi and knows that Ruth is as beautiful inside as she is outside. He goes out of his way to make sure that she and Naomi are fed. He has his servants leave extra stuff all over the place, just so she'll have plenty of food to feed her and Naomi. He is the second closest relative to Naomi and could fulfill that familial obligation of redemption that I told you about earlier. But he had to convince the one eligible man in front of him to give up his right to Ruth, which he does. You know how he does it? Here's the downside. If you're the second brother whose brother had died, and you take this woman to be your wife, what if she only bears one child? And it's yours. So you are left heirless. Not hairless. Heirless. You are left without an heir because that heir belongs to his brother. So there's a downside to it. You're also, most often, you're marrying a woman who you don't love. So there are downsides. And he goes to the guy and says, hey, Naomi needs help and she needs to be redeemed. And so the piece of land that she would have owned, her family would have been, Elimelech would have had, that needs to be redeemed. And the guy said, sure, I'll do it. He said, well, wait a minute. Before you make your decision, just know that her son had a daughter named Ruth, a Moabitess, and you're going to have to take her as your wife. And you know, And he knows what the implications there is. And he says, yeah, no, I can't do it. And so Boaz talks the other guy out of the redemption process, and he redeems Ruth for himself. Ruth and Boaz may be two of the most honorable, loving people ever mentioned in the Bible. It seems like all the other people that we read about in the Bible, I tell people, I believe that God uses all these other people with all these character flaws because he wants to show us that he can use me. And he can use you. Because let me tell you, most of these people have in the Bible had some major character flaws. But we're not showing any of those character flaws from Ruth or Boaz. Both of them risked it all for the love of another, and both of them are richly rewarded for the love. Now, you might say, well, how are they rewarded? Yeah, they get married. I want us to read something. Matthew 1:1 says, this is the genealogy of Jesus the Messiah, the son of David, the son of Abraham. And then we skip to 5 and 6. It says, Salmon, the father of Boaz, whose mother was Rahab, which, by the way, is the prostitute from Jericho. Boaz, the father of Obed, whose mother was Ruth. Obed, the father of Jesse, and Jesse, the father of King David. Ruth became the great-grandmother of King David and the eventual ancestor of King Jesus. She and Boaz were blessed to be ancestors of the Messiah that had been talked about. Isn't that fabulous? See, God is no respecter of persons. We saw that Rahab is included, the prostitute from Jericho that saved the spies. And because of that, her and her family were spared, and they were brought in, and she obviously married a Hebrew. And she's included. There aren't many women mentioned in the lineage of Jesus, in any of the lineages, but Rahab and Boaz are part of that. It's hard to read that in Spanish. Isn't it? Booze? No, we're having none of that. Be like Margaret. We need a translator. Boaz, the father of Obed, whose mother was Ruth. That's fabulous. She becomes the great, 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 and we could go on and on. I don't know how many greats it takes to get to 400 years, but it's a long time. But she is an ancestor of Jesus Christ. So you see, Ruth's undying love for Naomi and Boaz's steadfast and generous love for Ruth was rewarded because they became the great-grandparents of King David and the eventual ancestors of our great and glorious King Jesus, the Messiah. Ruth was honored as one of the few non-Jewish ancestors. You got two. As far as I know, there are two. Rahab and Ruth. Many times, it's difficult to love without wavering. How many of you know that? It is. I know there are times that I drive all of that. And there are times when she drives me a little crazy too. Love is not easy. When I do marriage counseling, I try to tell them, you know what? Love is great, but that's not going to keep you in marriage. Commitment does. And see, Naomi, Ruth, made that commitment to Naomi. She took that action. So often, we get down about the things that have happened in our lives, but God has already promised us that he will make something good out of our circumstances. I remember when my cousin passed. passed away. I was probably closer to he and his wife than anybody else in the family. And they took me in for whole summers in Texas. And just a fantastic guy. He was a salesman for Hershey's for 40 years. And back in there, they go around to all the stores and they, you know, put up the booths and all this kind of stuff. Well, he was a great relationship guy. And he made relationships with all those store owners. And he died of brain cancer. And I went back for his funeral. It was at Big Baptist Church there. And there were 3,000 people at his service. Most of them had nothing to do with church, even though he was a Sunday school leader and all these other kind of stuff. He had made relationships, and they loved him for it. Man, love is hard, but it can be rewarding. And see, at his service, he had already told the pastor, preach. Because if even one person is saved at my funeral, it'll all be worth it. And three people came to Christ at his service. That I know of. And, man, love, God can make it all worthwhile. Even our deaths can be something incredible if we just allow God to have his way. We don't know how our life and the troubles in our lives, all those things are going to affect other people. But God can make something great and beautiful out of them. Paul, the Apostle Paul says to rejoice in all things. Kim, I know it's hard. But oddly enough, Paul tells us to rejoice in those things. It says in all things, it doesn't say for all things. Right? There's a difference. Oh, thank goodness I've got cancer. That's not what he's saying. He's saying, I may have cancer, but I love God. And I'm going to continue to serve him however he asks me to do. I love my Lord. That's rejoicing. That's rejoicing in, not rejoicing for. He says, rejoice in all things. Doesn't mean just to grin and bear it. Sometimes we do that. That's not what God's asking for. God's saying, rejoice. I've got control. I'm in control. God has promised that he has plans for us, plans for a future. Open your heart to him and give him all the burdens that life has placed on you. Jesus said, Matthew 11:28-30, come to me, all you who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and humble in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy and my burden is light. As Paul shows this picture, Paul will remember, I guess Stevie was somewhere about a year and a half, and we went up to Seattle where we went into Portland, over to Portland, and went to Multnomah Falls. And it's high. I think it's the second highest waterfall in North America. And it's not really big, but it's high. And we had one of those backpacks, you know, Stevie in it. And Paul carried about 5 steps. He said, no, this is not going to happen. So I got the backpack. And I'm trudging. Yes, it was when I was in shape. And so I trudged up that mountain. But you know, when we got to the top of it, to look up, I couldn't wait to get that pack off of my back. Look at that. That's the way so many of us are in our lives. We carry this crud with us wherever we go. And God says, just drop the pack. That's what's meant by this verse. Drop the pack. Drop the pack. Picture yourself struggling up that hill, and Jesus is saying, drop the pack. You weren't meant to carry this love. Naomi felt that her life was nothing but bitterness. She didn't see the blessing that was Ruth. Imagine how she feels now in heaven. She knows how richly blessed that she truly was. God has turned her sorrow into joy. Let God do that in your own life. As the worship team comes back up, let's pray.